I'm Richard Dugan. Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, bringing you new paradigms for a new world here on a Saturday afternoon. We're coming to you live from the Central Coast, Santa Barbara, California. If you're listening to us live on the Internet, it's richarddugan.com, and click on that wonderful little link that'll get you the streaming of the program Tell Me Your Stories. Today we're going to be talking with regressionist Ramona Richards about reincarnation. You've been here before, or have you? Is it deja vu? We'll find out.
Walk with me, talk with me, tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Understanding is what it's about. Understanding where you are today and in reference to where you were yesterday. You know that today you are where you are because of the choices that you made yesterday. So the choices you make today will put you where you are going to be tomorrow. How does that affect past lives? Many people believe that we have lived past lives, that we reincarnate every so often, maybe every 100 years, 200 years, or whatever the case might be. We're going to talk with Ramona Richards, who is a regressionist, about this subject. And Ramona, welcome to the program. And how many times do you think you have been reincarnated?
Oh, well, several thousand.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, when they talk about old souls, and I say, oh, you're an old soul. Well, the joke there is that it takes some of us longer to figure it out than others.
In terms of that we're old souls.
Right. The main thing is that every moment of every day, it's an opportunity for greater awareness. And whether you're talking about this life or what we've brought from the past or what we're creating for our future, the awareness of being aware that we're after.
Absolutely. I guess it comes down to the knowing that we know.
Yeah.
And not just the believing or the faith, yeah. Which, again, those are all wonderful things.
In a unity consciousness that mm-hmm. there is, that we always have been, are, and always will be, and we're part of this greater consciousness.
Well, I've been promoting the program in reference to reincarnation and the role that it plays in us understanding our lives as we're living them today. So I guess the first place that we would want to start is in understanding just exactly what is reincarnation, defining terms, as it were.
Well, you can look up the dictionary. I'm not going to give you a dictionary definition, but the idea is that we always, like I just finished saying, we always have been and we always will be. We're universal beings. The bodies can die. This suit of clothes that we call a meat body can get old and deteriorate like everything else, but we continue on. And everything that we learn and experience continues on with us.
Mm-hmm.
We can call on it or not call on it in any given lifetime. It just depends where your consciousness is and what is the very best idea for any given lifetime to accelerate into greater awareness. That's all.
It seems as though there are a lot of factors that determine our beingness, if you will. Not so much our essence, but in terms of the personality. When we're born, you know, you'll hear the phrase, oh, he has so-and-so's eyes, or she has so-and-so's ears, so on and so forth. And as they grow, then they start talking about temperament and emotional outbursts, whatever they may be, and relating those to current relatives. Then there are those behaviors they can't pin on anybody that's living or shortly past. And I'm guessing that you would then sort of tap into the previous lives to try to explain some of the experiences.
Well, sure. I mean, they're like chains of experiences. Right now, most of us don't remember when we learned to walk. We don't remember when we learned to write our name, or certainly don't remember when we were born. But those things did happen to us, but they probably aren't necessary for what we're doing right now. But we have proclivities toward and abilities. We all have hundreds of abilities that we don't tap into in any given lifetime, but they're just lying there dormant until they're useful again. There's a lot of people that start writing or painting or playing the piano or something in their later part of their life, and they say, why didn't I try this before? Well, they were busy focusing on other things, and they may find that they have a small amount of talent or a tremendous amount of talent. And sometimes we hear about these children that are geniuses that come in and can play concertos when they're four and write new songs every day and read music and be able to orchestrate for 40 instruments and stuff like that. They probably didn't get it this lifetime, but they probably worked very hard on some previous lifetime and brought those talents forward.
It's said that children, of course, retain the memories more so of previous lifetimes, or at the very least, the existence prior to birth, and not just the time in the womb, but whatever we are, the essence of who and what we are, is, it was residing somewhere in the universe, if we will.
Yeah.
We could talk dimensions and all that wonderful stuff, but be that as it may, they do seem to retain those kinds of memories, and then as they grow older, and they become, quote-unquote, educated, they begin to... they get the information from their parents and all of the other input, they start to forget those things. Have you dealt with young children in the time when you were doing regression therapy that they were just like on it, they were spot on in terms of, oh, yes, I remember this and this and this and this and this kind of stuff?
Mm-hmm. We used to do little workshops occasionally with children. We do the same workshop with adults, and it would take a couple of weeks for them to get certain ideas and to feel comfortable. And a young child, you say, hey, have you thought of trying this? And they go off and try it, and they say, okay, we tried it. That works. Now what do we do? Because there's an openness. There's a kind of a joyful creativity to wanting to know things, and they're very, very curious. And sometimes our curiousness, which is a natural ability, gets watered down as we get older, and things happen to us. There's fears that come in. There's all sorts of attitudes about what's right and what's wrong and things like that. The thing that we hope we'll all develop is a natural, innate integrity to ourselves first, to our basic ideals and goals. And yes, we get trained with certain values, but there's values that we carry forth inside of us that may not have anything to do with our religion or our parents or our schooling or anything else. And those are important things to investigate and to write down. And when you it's important for most people, if they want to know more about themselves, we need to learn about ourselves first, obviously. We can't expect anyone else to understand us if we don't understand ourselves. I used to do family counseling, and people often come with sexual problems. Well, it's like understanding your own body. If you want to have a good sexual experience, you need to know what's right for you. You can't expect the other person to provide you with everything that you haven't done for yourself. It's the same thing with ideas and knowledge. To find out as much about yourself, your values, what your proclivities are, what your interests are, and start keeping logs and dream records and just cognitions that you have.
Mm-hmm.
We've all had those ahas when we were kids, certain things we came across, and it lit up the room and it changed our lives, just an idea. Those are important things.
As we begin the process of discussing reincarnation, a lot of folks will kind of bring to mind the commercial types of remembrances of reincarnation. Oh, yes, you once were Cleopatra, and you once were, you know, and they list all of these great leaders and figures down through history. But we all could not have been that. We all had to be pawns within the system as well. I mean, because it took all levels of society to make up society.
Well, when you're a teenager, don't you want to be the, like if you're a teenager now, the rock star or the star that's the flavor of the week right now.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean we're going to be that. Our lives will be much different. But to admire someone that was famous or that was powerful at a time we were living is a very natural thing. And sometimes it helps us get away from looking at what's actually happening, and maybe that particular area was full of strife and all sorts of setbacks and stuff, and it's easier to think of ourselves as Cleopatra or a king or something like that.
Now, I know it's sort of been answered as we've been talking here. I'm curious as to what it was that was intriguing to you about past lives that you decided to get into regression therapy in terms of helping others to bring out this information, if you will. And what I'm going to ask you to do, Ramona Richards, being my guest here on Tell Me Your Story, is to hold that answer as we take a quick break.
Okay.
And we're going to do that, and we're going to come back with Ramona Richards talking about reincarnation. She is a former regression therapist, and we're talking about your past lives, my past lives. Where have we been? We know where we are, somewhat. Where are we going? What will this information do for us? Stay with us. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story. Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, and I'm asking that question of Ramona Richards as we are talking about reincarnation. She is a former regressionist, and she is here to share with us her insights about past lives, the term reincarnation, if you will, because we've been dealing with the subject of out-of-body experiences, near-death experiences, as well as learning how to better understand the process and the part of life that we call death. And I suppose, Ramona, we could even say that recycling is a natural occurrence, because that's what happens to both, sure, the physical body as well as ours.
Absolutely.
So tell me, how did you get mixed up with this stuff? I mean, because a lot of people, they say, oh, come on, past lives.
Well,
this
Richard,
is all
you
we've
probably
got.
Had this experience, and a lot of our listeners have too.
Mm-hmm.
You've had an aha in life, a big cognition where things changed. But maybe the room got bright. I can remember looking at a book. I was in the library. I was 9 years old. And there was a book left out on the table, and it was a patio area of the library where you could take your books out and sit in the sun or the shade, and it was very pleasant. Someone had left a book on a table called Honey of the Nile, and it was about, I don't know, an Egyptian princess or queen. I don't even remember the story. I remember the moment I saw the word for the first time, reincarnation. And the whole place got bright. I could see the texture of wood on the table. I could see the veins in the plants which I hadn't noticed before. Everything changed. It was one of those life-changing moments when I saw the word and then found out what it meant and then started thinking about how it applied to my life. There are so many things that we bring forward. We've been both sexes. We've been all colors, all creeds. We've lived all over this wonderful planet. And I can remember as a small child looking at myself in the mirror and thinking, gee, they say I'm a pretty little girl, but I have awfully broad shoulders for a little girl. I bet I'd make a great-looking guy. And then I had, most little kids had little toy cars that they pedaled around. Mine was an airplane with a propeller. And a tail rudder that worked. And I didn't think that was strange at all. I was the only kid that I've ever seen that had one of those. But I'd also been a pilot. So you carry some things forward. And we carry proclivities toward things. The main thing is that we have choice.
Mm-hmm.
And every choice is kind of the most recent link in an ongoing chain of choices. And we bring them forward. And, you know, we kind of feel predestined when we receive, stuff that we've forgotten. And
yeah,
we've also forgotten our earlier choices. But the idea of predestination is just due to earlier choices. But the most important thing is that it doesn't eliminate our freedom to choose in the present right now. If you understand that you have things that you may have brought forward, or you don't even connect them with something in the past yet, but as you start learning about yourself, you think, well, why do I have that strange reaction or this resistance or maybe a hatred or a fear of something? If that's brought forward, we still have choices that we can change things that do not help us in our current situation.
You know, you made a comment off air about comparing reincarnation to being an actor in a movie or multiple movies, that we just keep playing
or
different
theater.
Movies. Theater.
It's like a play.
And it brought to mind how there are so many elements in this life that we're living now that parallel the constructs of, and I think right now of the computer, and then I think of
mm-hmm.
the human mind and all of the elements that make up the computer. And I can trace down, okay, well, that's this component in the brain that matches this component in a computer and so forth. Well, I'm thinking the same thing in terms of reincarnation, and not just this life, but that it would make sense, just from even a logical standpoint, that reincarnation would be a valid consideration.
Well, you said computer. You put something in the computer and you say, I want information about such and such.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you don't know how the computer arrives at that information,
mm-mm,
but it comes back and gives you that information. You don't know when you pick up a paintbrush how you innately know how to paint something or sculpt something,
mm-hmm,
or how to play something on a musical instrument, or how to be very good at math or languages. Maybe languages come easily to you. Maybe sports come easily. And you think about, well, nobody else in my family has this. Or maybe everybody else in your family does, and you think, well, I just inherited it.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow you knew things before you even did the exercises.
Now, I'm curious, we've talked about coming back multiple times, maybe thousands,
mm-hmm,
as all of the different ranges of human beings that we can return to as. But there are some cultures, some religions that actually believe that we come back as other than human. What are the parameters as you understand them?
Well, you're talking about transmigration of souls into animals and things like that.
And that's different.
Yeah, I've regressed hundreds of people, but I've never come across that. It doesn't mean that it doesn't happen. It's just that that's not been my experience. But then think about it as a kind of a large energy field. We're tuning forks to each other. We draw people and circumstances into our life that have an attunement with the energy that we're putting out. So maybe all the people that were drawn to me that were attuned and I was attuned to them, maybe we're all equally crazy and insane in the same area. So it doesn't mean it's true. You cannot prove reincarnation. You can regress people back and date things and find names and dates that they didn't know about and go check graveyards and records. It still doesn't prove anything.
Yeah.
But the proof comes from within. When you start to know that you have certain talents and abilities, there are people that I can tell you so many stories about different abilities. One woman had no nursing experience, certainly no surgery experience, and went into a doctor's office that did in-office surgery several times a week. And one time his assistant surgeon wasn't there, and he couldn't cancel everything, so he put her into it. She was wonderful. She knew exactly what to do. She didn't know how. She'd watched a few of them, but still there were things she knew to do. And afterwards he said, blood and guts don't bother you at all. She said, no. And she got thinking about they never had. Well, as they worked with the surgeries, they started working with energy fields and healing ideas and things like that that the surgeon hadn't come across before, and making the patients feel very comfortable. And though it was against the law, she turned out to be a better assistant surgeon in the office surgeries than the regular doctors were. Well, it turned out later that she discovered that she had done triage in a war. And when you do that kind of thing out on the battlefield and you're cutting off limbs and you're sticking people's innards back in and taping them over and hoping to get them back to a base camp and things like that, nothing really bothers you about blood and guts anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a talent that she brought forward. And we all have these abilities.
Well, I know I remember taking an aptitude test, I think I was 18 or something, and it said I should be a farmer, which I just scoffed at. I am now 30 years older, or what have you. I'm 48, and I'm a farmer.
You have a way with plants?
Apparently. I love chickens, and it's great.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking, well, where did that come from? You know, and so there must be somewhere in my past that I can connect with something having to do with working the land and working with animals.
Sure.
You know, that type of thing.
And are you interested in holistic folk processes about healing the body and health and things like that?
Very much so, to the extent that I really do try to listen to my body. I'm not as attentive all the time as I should be. I get some nudges every once in a while from my wife, but nonetheless, I know that some of the things that that we have planted, for example, in our garden, just they're just incredible, as opposed to, say, the supermarket. But there's something different about doing that, and it's like, where did this come from? Because, like I said, I grew up in the city, and that seemed to be the life for me.
And well, most farming experiences, and until recently, didn't have ways of traveling except for a few miles with horse and cart and things like that. They didn't have cars. They had to solve their problems of their crops needing some help with bugs or diseases, or their animals having wounds that needed to be healed. One of the old processes for healing wounds in animals is to take the urine from cows and horses and dip them into rags and wrap them around open wounds, and it heals. Like if you have chickens and your chickens have open wounds, it'll heal them without any scar tissue.
I did not know that.
Yeah, but you probably do know a lot of things you haven't experimented with yet.
Yeah.
And these are old folk remedies that people learned from being isolated and having to make do with what they had.
Interesting.
And there's a lot of things we bring forward. But there's all sorts of things that we can find out about ourselves just starting off with creative imagination.
And What we're going to do when we come back from our break, I'm going to ask you if you can give us some techniques that we might be able to use to begin the process of investigating and maybe even tapping into that knowledge, that information from those past lives, maybe helping us to do some form of a regression therapy on ourselves to help us to tap into the info, to help us live a better life today and make some choices for tomorrow. We'll do that as we come back with Ramona Richards, former regressionist, and we're talking about reincarnation. Your life, my life, we're all living this life, and what choices will we make for the next life? This is Tell Me Your Story. Stay tuned. Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan. This is a program designed to bring you new paradigms for a new world. Views expressed are not necessarily those of the staff, management, ownership of this station. And we ask you to check it out. You have the only thing you have to gain is a new world, the world that you want. And we're trying to help you to do that here on Tell Me Your Story. With Ramona Richards, we're talking about reincarnation. She's a former regressionist. I'm trying to remember. Oh, I almost forgot what I was going to ask you. Why is it that we forget? What are the reasons why we forget our past lives?
Well, you know, you remember the old axiom that I said, I think it goes, those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, some memory, it depends upon the time as we evolve, is right for the time, and others it's best to be occluded. And then some of it just isn't necessary. I mean, is it necessary to remember when we first took our first steps, or first said dada? Who cares, you know? So the passage of time is a natural thing for forgetting. If you've tried to remember every meal you had last week, there's no point in that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. But
some of those meals are forgettable, too.
But the nice thing about coming in with a new body, mm-hmm. It's an opportunity to start things fresh.
Yes.
To grow and start things fresh. And then it guards against complacency. Say you had fabulous talents or authority or something else in a past situation, you may carry some of that forward, but maybe there was arrogance and things like that you don't need to bring in with you. But I think the most important thing is that it lets us grow at a pace that we can handle. Sometimes people go to other people to tell them about their past lives.
Mm-hmm.
They go to psychics. And say a psychic lays on somebody, well, you killed 15 people and you chopped up them little pieces and ate them for dinner, and the person is very devout this lifetime, that can really, really set them off into a stress pattern that they don't need. And even if it's true, it's not important if they're on a path of their learning to appreciate and work with and be of service to others, then they don't need to learn right now that maybe they were a cannibal or some kind of a mutilator of Homo sapiens before.
Mm-hmm.
That's not helpful. We're given information when it is helpful and when we start to ask for it. And the lovely thing is about everything that's ever happened to us is in the subconscious mind. We can go back, you can be regressed into anything, but the lovely thing about regression is the subconscious kind of puts up blocks until the time is right. And the safest form of regression is that which you do for yourself. I really encourage people to learn self-hypnosis, because then when the time is right, you'll be given the information that you need in this moment to be helpful in this situation, and not all sorts of mucking up other stuff that maybe not will not be of interest or useful to you. Even the most devoted regressionist that really wants to help, remember, it's like a psychic. Help that comes from other people outside of ourselves can be very good, but it comes through their filter. It comes through their consciousness. And we're all humans, mm-hmm. and psychic people make mistakes, and regressionists make mistakes. Sometimes they push too hard, or usually they can't push you into an area that's not safe for you. But one thing, definitely, if you're learning self-hypnosis, you will not be in danger ever of going any place that you shouldn't go. The subconscious will help you with exactly what you need when you need it.
So let's take a look at self-hypnosis in regards to regressing oneself. What are some of the basic steps that we can
I don't want to get into that in the air because it can get altered and stuff like that, but there's lots of information out there on it.
Okay.
There's lots of information on learning self-hypnosis. There's books on it. There's all sorts of stuff that's gone on.
Mm-hmm.
So you can learn a lot. But if you don't want to get into that, just to start with, one of the things that's good to start to working with is your creative imagination, because the things that begin as pure imagination on one level kind of resolve themselves later on with work into accurate memory. And that's what's really exciting about working with yourself. You can ask yourself, for instance, what country am I most attracted to? And if I were to go there, or if I could go to any place I wanted in the world, where would I go? And if so, you kind of start your imagination, what kind of food would I eat? Well, if you don't know, let your imagination come up with something. What kind of music would I listen to? What kind of religion would I be drawn to there? What colors? What kind of architecture? What period of history for this particular country would I be interested in? You know, what type of people would I find there? And how would I feel about all these things? What would my feelings be about the food, the music, the religion, the people, the history, the architecture? You know, am I drawn to TV and movies and books about this country? Have I been to this country? And when I went there, what were my feelings? What did I expect? And then what actually happened? And then if you haven't been there, tell yourself a fantasy story. What would happen to you if you went there? And write it down. And then write your feelings down. You know it's a fantasy story, but what are your feelings as you're writing this stuff down? What's happening to you? These are kind of what are you discovering about your feelings and ideas, creative ideas, that might be helpful to you in this life?
Interesting.
You know?
And
these are just little exercises. Right. Everybody can keep a dream journal, too.
Mm-hmm. And the creative aspect is more closely tied to the subconscious than the more logical side.
That's right. So it's a right brain thing rather than a left. Hopefully we're all whole brain.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a left brain education in this country and in most countries of the world, and we're not really encouraged to use our right brain very much. And you need to be able to tune in and to visualize and to see mental imagery and to try doing imagination exercises, because, just like I said a minute ago, they lead to accurate memory sooner or later. You'll find you have, there was a man who, during the Second World War, was going to see movies about the war, and the Japanese were always shown as dirty little yellow people who were just awful and then were some kind of bestiality people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way they were depicted in the bold black and white war pictures. And he, as a child, would go to sleep in these things and leave the movie feeling very traumatic and not be able to sleep that night and had all this stuff. Well, later on, he found in regression that he'd been a samurai many, many lifetimes. And the code of the samurai in the lifetimes that he lived during, because the samurai changed over periods of hundreds of years, but this time that he was living as samurai, it was a very honorable profession, and honor was everything, and your word was everything. And the way that the Japanese people were being depicted in the black and white war movies was just the opposite of that. They had no honor. They had no integrity. And this just went against everything that he experienced, that he, you know, was bringing forth in his memory, but was just below his consciousness. And also then he started realizing that as a child, he couldn't understand why people lied. The idea of lying and not telling the truth, I mean, it took him a long time to really recognize that people actually lied, for Pete's sake, you know? And how come? How would they demean themselves by doing such a thing? But that was all part of that samurai experience where honor was everything.
Wow.
So we bring these things forward.
Mm-hmm. And we do that from past lives, and obviously we even do that in our present day from the past months and years of our lives here. And yet, at the same time, we have the choice to make new choices in the present to change our lives in the future.
Right, and we bring the past choices forward, too. Another example, a person that was, it was in the early 1900s, around 1913, 14, something like that, came from the East, rented one of those touring cars that had just come out, and was touring California. There weren't many roads, very few roads. It was just kind of ruddy paths, and was going down the coastline of California. And between, I believe it's between Newport Beach and Laguna, there's a great outjetting flat point that jets out over the sea.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, they were making a movie. I guess it was one of the first ones. And they had these horses and the Indians running around and people with these cameras. And, you know, it was very crude. But the person watched all this happening and thought, gosh, too bad I'm leaving for Europe. When I come back, I want to get involved in this new business called movies. Okay, the person went to Europe, got involved in the First World War, was killed during the war, and when they picked up a body again, it was in California, in a movie family, and the whole life was involved with the entertainment profession. And it wasn't until driving along this now very modern highway that leads along the coast in California between Newport Beach and Laguna and seeing that outjetting thing that part of this all came back.
We had what we term in this lifetime deja vu of sorts.
Yes, uh-huh. But the postulate, the idea that I'm going to have this as a goal, I'm going to come back into this country and be in this business, was carried from the lifetime after the death in the war into the next lifetime.
Wow. And, of course, all through the process of regression therapy, he was actually able to tap into this whole process that he actually went through.
Mm-hmm.
Do
you want to talk about changing of bodies?
Well, I'd like to do that. I'm also curious about the are the most recent lives the easiest to pull up because they are the most recent, or is it more
not
the lives that are the most impactful?
No, I mean, sometimes lives thousands of years away are safer.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
It's different for, we're all so individual. And there are so many experiences that people can have, so many hundreds of thousands of experiences that you can say it to yourself as a regressionist, oh, I know where this is going. No, you don't.
Yeah.
Because everybody is very different, and you very soon learn not to anticipate or judge where that person is going because they are uniquely themselves.
The analogy has been used of our essence as basically changing vehicles. And we change, I mean, I've been driving for 10 years, and I've had four vehicles.
Well, you drove bicycles, too, didn't you?
And I did, and I rode bicycles up until that point.
And maybe scooters?
Probably a scooter or two as a kid.
Those are all vehicles.
Yeah. And so really the body itself is nothing more than a vehicle, and it leads basically into what you were about to jump into, and that is the changing of bodies over the period of time in reference to reincarnation. Again, all going back to choice, but let me hear what you have to say, your perspective on that.
You want it now or after the commercial?
We'll take it right now.
Okay.
Gonna hold off on this break.
All right. Well, we've been both body types. And sometimes it's traumatic for a person to discover they have proclivities that are other than the body type they're in. And there's a lot of discussion about this, but sometimes when a person is in a different body type than what their feelings are for, particularly sexually, it's because they just come out of the other body type, or they're preparing to go into a different body type next time.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that can be very easy, and sometimes it's not. For instance, a pilot in the First World War who had always been heterosexual throughout his life, during the war learned that there were no women around. You know, there were only prostitutes, and when the average life of a pilot, I think, in the First World War was about 3 weeks or something. And the people that you were around, the people that you were going up every day in the individual planes with, and this was at a time when the planes were all individual. You didn't have two people, just one person. It was the beginning of the war. This man fell in love with another pilot, and they had long discussions, and they had this great unity between them, because they were going up every day and never knowing that they were going to come back again. So when the person died and came into a female body, there was a great interest in penises. And when the little girl's mother used to change, when babysit and change the diapers of other little kids and they were boys, she always wanted to look at them. But not because she was interested from a little girl point of view. She didn't remember, of course, of having a homosexual love affair just before she dropped her last body.
Mm-hmm.
But she also loved being in a little girl's body because of that. That encounter, and she was also raised in a family that was a show business family, where it was important to know how to put on makeup, how to wear clothes properly, how to do your hair, how to be very, very feminine, and how to dance and sing and do all the feminine things. So the transition was very easy for this person.
That's interesting, because there's a story out just in the previous couple of weeks of a young boy, and it is a boy by birth, who, for maybe these same reasons, has the proclivities and the desire to do nothing more than dress up as a little girl. And the parents, they struggled and fought and therapy for a while, and then they just finally realized, you know what? This isn't worth it, because it's too traumatizing, and we just need to allow him to be her.
Mm-hmm. Now, you don't know whether him that was in a body, boy's body now, was in a girl's body previously.
Right.
Or is learning to come into a girl's body
and
has the desire pattern and the awareness that this is going to help in a more universal understanding.
Exactly.
We need to be understanding of the proclivities of both sexes.
Exactly.
I consider we're really androgynous beings that are taking on certain proclivities of the bodies that we're operating in to learn patience and to learn non-judgment and things like that.
I think that's one of the processes of learning about reincarnation in your past lives, is to begin to understand, hey, I've been all kinds of people. How can I be opposed to and hate and have these feelings?
In every color, every religion.
Exactly, exactly. We're going to wrap things up here on Tell Me Your Story with Ramona Richards when we come back from our break. We're talking about reincarnation, and Ramona is a former regression therapist. We'll be talking more about this as we come to the end of Tell Me Your Story in just a moment. I'm Richard Dugan. Don't go away. Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're giving you choices and knowledge of those choices so you can fulfill your dreams and make your world a better place in which to live. And we're talking with Ramona Richards, a former regressionist, talking about reincarnation, past lives, choices made, and results of those choices. I don't usually use the word consequences because it has such a negative connotation. The fact is that for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction, which kind of leads into our final segment here, and that has to do with karma of our lives. We make choices in this life, Ramona. We choose to drive the wrong way on a one-way street. Well, you know what the possible outcome could be there, so we try not to do that too many times. But how do we do that in terms of lifetimes in reference to karma and the universal laws?
Well, let's talk about the word karma for a moment. In the Western world, it tends to take on a connotation of punishment. Maybe that's because of our Christian idea of heaven and hell. I don't know. But karma is not punishment. It's an opportunity to get to do something again that didn't quite suit the outcome, wasn't quite what you were wanted as a spiritual entity, and you get an opportunity to try it again and do it better. It's just an opportunity. The universal laws of cause and effect. There is a lawfulness of reality. We can't create a circle, a square circle or something like that. We can't grow back a limb yet.
Some are working on it.
But at the soul level, there comes a choosing through an awareness of what the choices are that are in harmony with a universal oneness, a sense of oneness and unity consciousness. And I think a lot of people, and particularly in the West now, are getting used to the idea of unity consciousness, that if we look at each other as part of a universal whole, then it's pretty hard to be as selfish or as judgmental as we might have been previously. This recognition that there is a universal oneness, well, it acts like a magnetic force, and it draws us to certain experiences in life. And if you've had, say, negative experiences that you need to have a chance to take another whack at, if you get a higher level of consciousness and an overview about the situation, you can go in and do it a little differently.
It sort of sounds like in grade school, a do-over.
Yeah. Well, this is kind of looked at as a school ground. That this is a school for maturing. And the great American psychic Edgar Cayce said that there was three things we're here to learn about: time, space, and patience. Well, you say patience. Wait a minute. That's like, there's apples and oranges, and then there's pizza, and that doesn't mix. Mm-hmm. But patience is. I mean, we have these little short lifetimes, mostly 4 score and 10, but we can't learn everything in that. So we take little bites out of things that we're trying to, we're interested in, that we want to increase our scope of reality and awareness about, and then we get a chance to take another little bite over here, and that's where the patience comes in. Because every lifetime gives us opportunities to be more patient in area. Just think about today. When have you become impatient during this day?
Oh, not at all.
Wonderful. But most of us get annoyed, at the stoplight or the supermarket or something else. And if we just take a minute and think about, okay, what am I doing to my liver, to my stomach, to my heart, my breathing right now? Mm-hmm. And I'm getting annoyed at this person. Why? Because why? And maybe it's over something really silly. And then you have to stop and think, is this person doing the best they can? They probably are. They're not deliberately trying to annoy us. Our universe is not important to them, but we forget about that. I'm sure you've caught yourself being rude when you didn't intend to.
Oh yeah, on occasion, sure.
Or taking that extra thing of the stoplight and rushing in front of somebody so they had to put their brakes on so they didn't hit you from behind. And things that we do, these dumb things every day. Now, they may not lead to karmic circumstances where you've caused an accident and killed someone, but there are circumstances that you're growing habitually in yourself if you allow yourself to continue down that road.
Well, people are always searching for a roadmap. They're always searching for some way to better understand themselves where they are today. And I think that as we've talked today, reincarnation is certainly a help. And the people can actually go through a process themselves, as you've described, in terms of the creative part of the mind, the right half of the brain, and allowing those images to come up that may very well be from past years or past lives, but it's just very important for us to tap into those.
I can give you an example. Do we have a minute?
We have a minute.
Okay. I was in the library. I'm training a dog to be a service dog. It's a puppy. It's a little black puppy, very sweet. It was laying very quietly next to my feet while I was checking out books. A mother and two little girls came in, and the little girls started screaming at the top of their lungs at the sight of the puppy. Now, maybe they have bad relationships with dogs this lifetime or for something from the past. Maybe they were bitten to death by a black dog, you know. But the mother has the opportunity to work them through whatever those fears are instead of enhancing it, which is what she did during this brief moment. The kids were screaming, and then she's saying, oh, that dog is probably going to bite her, you know, and she drug him out of the library instead of bringing them over and gradiently introducing it to a very gentle, quiet dog who is not even reacting to their screams because the dog is trained not to react to sudden loud noises.
Hmm.
We have opportunities to overcome our fears. And once we associate and understand a little bit more what we're afraid of, we're not as judgmental about it either.
Yeah, I know that in my childhood and growing up with animals, I'm dealing with them now. I have a dog, but when I was growing up, birds and dogs were my arch enemies, but not from my perspective. It was like I was always being attacked and pecked in the face or in the hand or something, and even to an ostrich, I was a meal or something. But I've come to realize and understand that it's just they're just checking out their world. Just like I was as a kid.
Yeah.
Well, I want to say this has been a fascinating hour that we've spent talking about this subject, and hopefully we've educated people and given them some insight into this process as well as into themselves. And if they want to get more information, if they want to get in touch with you, all they have to do is email me, richard@richarddugan.com, and I will get them in touch with you and if they would like to get further information from you.
Wonderful.
All right.
And I thank anyone for their interest in any information, and thank you for your interest in this subject.
Well, thank you for joining us. It's been a pleasure, and we're going to have you back on again to talk about some other subjects because you have a wide variety of interests, and we want to tap all of that wisdom if we can to educate our listeners, to give them more choices.
I'm not in the thing of educating anyone. I'm just passing on information.
That's okay? What we want. We want to gather that information.
Everybody educates themselves.
Absolutely. Okay. Again, I thank you so much for joining us. Stay on the line. I'm Richard Dugan, and we ask you to stay with us next Saturday. We're going to have Barry and John Lee Chaplin all the way from Spain. Yes, they're going to be calling in from Spain. They have their own radio show, and they're going to be giving you a reading. Here on Tell Me Your Story, 800, that's 866-564-1290. That's the number for you to call in next Saturday here on Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan. Love to love.